Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, it's blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Hello and welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Network. I'm your host, Carter Rodriguez. Justin Rowan's away for the day, so we've got a fake Boston Celtics fan and a general NBA enthusiast, Michael Kruger, here filling in. How's it going, Mike?
Yeah, that's absolutely accurate. I'm about as fake as it comes when it comes to being a Celtics fan.
More fake Celtics fan, you or new agnostic Zach Lowe?
I feel like because Zach Lowe actually has a history with it, that he can put it to bed, and I'll claim myself being a circa 2008 Boston Celtics fan that that's about as fake as it comes.
So just if you're wondering, just off the bat, whether to respect Mike, you don't have to. He's a bandwagon loser. Cavaliers wrecked the Celtics last night in a way that I don't think a lot of people thought was coming, just given the fact that Boston, you know, they have been more competitive this season. I thought they proved something about themselves in the first couple of rounds, the Bulls series notwithstanding, I guess. But, you know, like they proved something in that Wizards series. They kind of proved that they were a little bit more built for the postseason than we thought they were, or to some extent they did, and it didn't really even look competitive.
No, I think it was in the back of my mind that coming into the game, you kind of understand that once the ball's tipped, anything can happen, right? So you're coming in, you're like, okay, this doesn't look great. We just played. They're going to be exhausted. The Cavs have had so much time to repair, so much rest. Let's see if we can just get that, that little bit of variance from some really great three-point shooting and the home court and then being jazzed. But at the same time, it's like, this could go really badly, and it did.
Well, it was crazy because, like, in our preview podcast, Justin and I were talking about, like, the things that, like, kind of have to go well for Boston. Like, they were going to have to keep shooting the cover off the ball. They started 2 for 16. They're going to have to keep Tristan off the offensive glass. He had 6 offensive boards within the first, like, 20 minutes. They were going to have to force turnovers. The Cavs had 8 turnovers.
Yeah. 7% turnover percent. It's, you know, when they started off and they were just breaking open threes, and Isaiah's shots are short, and he's in the lane, and there's just no room to operate. And then on the flip side, LeBron comes down the court, and he's faced with Kelly Olynyk or Al Horford on a switch, and it's just kind of embarrassing at that point. It's like, okay, at what point can we go full Popovich and just sit everyone? Gerald Green, shoot 20 times, that's fine. Like, let's move on. It was in the first, you know, kind of similar to the Warriors game 2, it kind of felt like in the first 10 minutes or so, it's like, all right, my hope that this could somehow be competitive is not going to happen in this game, but it doesn't mean that it can't happen in a future game. It's just pack it in because this one's not happening.
The Cavs went back to that hard trapping, hard blitzing pick and roll strategy that they used in the second round and to some extent in the first round, whenever Paul George caught it off, coming off a screen, and Isaiah Thomas went 7 for 19, 17 points, had 10 assists, basically playing, you know, just leaking out to the 4-on-3, had 4 turnovers. Do you think he's going to play? Do you think this is just kind of what they're going to do, and he's just going to have a hard time with it? Or do you think it was a function of his fatigue and, you know, just lacking some shot making that he normally has?
Yeah, I definitely think the shot making will be better. Will he have a dominant game like he did, you know, in the Wizards series like previously? Like I don't think that he's probably not set up to do that, especially with the athleticism that they have on the wings. Just you even saw when he tried to size up LeBron and drive on him and he went and like he didn't even shoot it. Like he threw it up in the air and it looked like live angle that LeBron blocked it. But he didn't even touch it. Like he just didn't. He just like
functionally, legally, it might have been a shot.
Yeah. It was like, I mean, I was like, what is LeBron complaining about? He blocked that shot. That is fine that Isaiah caught it. And then you saw the replay angle where he like tosses it gently in the air 2 feet because he doesn't want to get embarrassed.
Nope. Fuck it. Nope. So, not doing it.
So, you know, that even if he's, you know, more rested, which is he going to be after another 38 minutes?
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the problem with the way the TV schedule worked out, too, is it's like, these guys don't have a huge break coming, I don't think, in the schedule, do they?
No, I mean, we can pull up the schedules we're talking right now, but I think it's...
I guess what I'm saying is it's not like the Warriors and Spurs were, because they started... Or before the East Finals, they had like 5 days off. Yeah, it's every other day.
Yeah.
That's so this entire series.
So there's no... It's not as... You know, we can say like, okay, he was tired. And if he was less tired, would he make some of those shots? And you saw some of those pull-up threes and things that just hit front iron. It's like, that's legs. I mean, that is what that looks like.
But that's also what happens when you have one offensive creator for the entirety of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, it's not quite like Thunder level where you don't even have secondary creators on the floor. Mm-hmm. But, like, every action involves him when he's on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else. And like you're saying, even that hard trap, like, what the Wizards did in Game 7, it involved him creating and finding Kelly Olynyk in space. And amazingly, Kelly Olynyk actually converted. Which, I mean, that brings a little bit to how, I don't know, if he comes in and feels a little bit more prepared, a little bit more rested, can he attack that, and can he find an Al Horford, and can we find Magic? I mean, really, I think what it comes down to, if we're looking forward at all, is hidden threes. Like, you know, yeah. it's
as simple as that.
Would the game be different if they made more of their first 11? Going 1-for-11 and Isaiah hit that shot, going in half to make it 2-for-12, like that.
Yeah, but I mean, doesn't it have to bother them that the Cavs also shot terribly from three? I mean, Love went 6-for-9, but James went 1-for-6, Irving went 0-for-3, JR 0-for-1. Korver 1-for-6. I don't know. I
still managed a 127 offensive rating. Because the layups were there. I mean, the layups were wide open. What you almost, it does, and I think we've talked about this before, but it does kind of become Grinnell-style basketball where you kind of need to go 2-for-3. Like, in what world is there a defense that the Celtics can put out there that prevents LeBron having good looks at the basket? Like, I don't think there is one. Not this year, you know.
No. I think that's what I just keep thinking about is, like, the problem with this Celtics roster is it doesn't force you to do anything. It doesn't. Like, oh, they shifted down and now Crowder's playing power forward. Well, Love can guard Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
For all his growth, he can still guard Jay Crowder. And then now you're getting murdered on the boards even more, and you don't have your main guy to throw at LeBron anymore.
No, you saw even on the flip side when they were like when the Cavs kind of had a smaller lineup out there and the Celtics stayed a little bigger. It's like LeBron was guarding Kelly Olynyk, and it was like, what is going on? What's the answer to that? Like, it's not like Kelly Olynyk's going to make LeBron pay in the post or anything like that. So
he's just worse.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was thinking about it about what would the Celtics need. And they do if they had like a KG in his prime, like if you had
that would help
that athletic or not even prime but post prime like Celtics KG,
yeah.
Like that athletic big man that if they were going to run these pick and rolls could come out hard and at least body up in some way shape or form. Like right now you saw Horford and Olynyk both like backpedal in the lane. It's like where are you going to go? Like what? And no one's behind you to help. Like there's no one coming across the lane that's going to contest and make it difficult. I mean, the great poor Isaiah Thomas trying to contest,
getting stiff armed in midair. I mean, yeah, that's the problem. Is like there's no help coming. And it's funny. They have a decent sized front line when they're starting Amir Johnson, and you know Kelly Olynyk is ostensibly like 6'10". But, like, they're just really small at the perimeter.
Yeah. And even those guys, they're not athletic. Like, you know, it's one thing to be 6'10".
Yeah.
And it's another thing to be able to...
It's another thing to be like Tristan Thompson.
Exactly. Like, Tristan Thompson's, like, quick jump, like, his ability. Like, you saw on every offensive rebound that had some air under it, the Cavs were contesting. Like, they were jumping up, tapping it out, and it might end up in another Cavs player's hands versus... You know, on the other end, it's like they can just jump higher than the Celtics. So when the ball's in the air, they're going to go get it. And then that's, you know, so it's, I don't see how this roster being constructed is all variance. And
yeah.
It's all about.
Yeah, it will look better if Avery Bradley hits some threes and the Cavs stay cold.
100%. And that's like, you know, you look at Avery 2-for-8, Isaiah 2-for-7. I mean, Jay Crowder shooting great is...
Jay Crowder is, like, wild. Like, he's, like, hitting the point, like, because he was, like, 40% this year, right, from three?
In the neighborhood.
And it's, like, he's kind of getting into that neighborhood where it's, like, I just think it's going in. Like, yeah. He is, like, this team has more shooting than it has in the past, even if the personnel is mostly the same. Like, Horford can hit. Crowder's turned into a good shooter. Bradley's turned into a good shooter. But it's just, like, it just feels like guys you're okay leaving still.
Yeah, I don't think, even Jay, like you said, like, I mean, okay, he was 4-for-6. He did shoot 39.8 on the season. Avery Bradley shot 39%. You know, hit 2 out of 5 three-point attempts. But it's, you know, like you said, when Avery catches on the wing, it's not like it's a Klay Thompson situation. They're like, oh,
you're not like shit. Yeah. And like scrambling out.
So back to your point about like who's the offensive creator, like that affects the gravity on the floor. Like having people out there that it's like that you're that primary defender feels like I can't go more than 3 steps like away from this guy, or we're gonna give up a really high percentage shot. And that's not the case. Now,
yeah, I always like the players where gravity doesn't match reality.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like they're good shooters, but it doesn't matter because they're not actually being guarded that closely, and they're not so good at shooting that they'll murder you.
Oh, and
like I think someone said like Darrell Arthur is one of those guys.
Yeah.
Like hits like threes at a really good percentage, but just no one guards him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't take enough to make it work.
And that's so his 3-point, you know, his 5 3-pointers game look different than Klay's 5 mm-hmm. 3-pointers, and they're still shooting the same percentage because it's more contested for a better shooter, and that causes a better opportunity. So when Isaiah drives, like, yeah, he'll have a kickout opportunity, but he also doesn't have the high percentage shot in the lane either because guys are there to guard him. So in terms of like adjustments for game two, one thing I thought was interesting that I want to bring up that I saw people talk about was, I want to hear your perspective, the Love plus bench lineups. That
was surprising.
That they play 2 minutes in the regular season and then they roll out in like the second quarter and they're just murdering the Celtics.
Is there any indicator that the Cavs aren't worried about the Celtics?
Yeah, yeah. Experimenting with just new lineups.
Cavs had a quiet postseason. Let's see if we can get him some touches. Like, it's fine. It's game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, but why not try some stuff out in the meantime? I don't know. It's like it just feels like they have it. Like all of the stuff you were worried about just reared its ugly head. Like mm-hmm. the Cavs are a lot switchier than the Wizards. So even when the blitz didn't happen and they just had to pass it off, LeBron takes care of Thomas fine.
Yeah,
Tristan takes care of Thomas fine. And you'll notice that Channing Frye was not in the rotation in this one.
Oh, that's interesting.
They had Richard Jefferson out there. And my theory is that I think that they know Channing's not going to play much against the Warriors. And RJ has been out of the rotation in the playoffs thus far. And I think that they're getting him up to speed. Another, like, not a great look for the Celtics.
Yeah, so you got to think it's not as if Channing Frye is a bad matchup in this series. Like, it's not like he couldn't be out there against the Kelly Olynyk or something.
He would be completely fine against them in the series. But you do stay a lot switchier and, like, be able to take out a lot of those actions. With regards to Thomas on the defensive end, they also did everything we thought they were going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, the plays, especially in the third quarter, when he was hiding on Korver, and they just used Korver as the screener for LeBron. It's an easy shot every time. I don't know what you do with that.
That's back to where, okay, so who is that? Do they, if they had that athletic, you know, defensive four, you know, I mentioned KG, but obviously Draymond would be that guy. Like, you do that kind of, they used to, the Warriors did that where they would run this. They would try to run a screen roll with Steph's man, and in the space, Draymond would run up and switch with Steph real quick. So Draymond would be the guy that would step up onto LeBron in that. And like, there's no other player.
Yeah, ostensibly, it would be Al Horford. Like, Al Horford's a good defensive player. It's just
not in space against a guy like LeBron.
Yeah,
I mean, work.
Yeah, it just feels like that's a situation where they're just going to get a free runway every time, or if they jam LeBron on the action, wait for LeBron's man to recover,
mm-hmm.
then you just slip it.
Yeah.
And Korver or JR gets a wide open three. And Korver had a couple really good looks that he just missed off of those actions, or LeBron got a free runway with that 4-on-3.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and back to
like LeBron on a 4-on-3 with this team is so unfair.
I know there's so many cross court to the corner, the weak side corner, bounce passes in the lane.
Yeah, he had a little skip pass to Korver in the corner that was immediately followed by Marcus Smart's putback dunk.
Yeah.
And the dunk was so amazing. I was like, wait a minute, guys, hold on. That skip was fucking ridiculous. Yeah.
Speaking of dunks, I think my favorite moment of the game as a Celtics fan was Avery going at LeBron.
Oh, yeah.
And LeBron in perfect verticality getting called for a foul.
Yeah.
But I still loved it. Like, Avery Bradley just not afraid. Like, all right, this is my chance. Like, I'm going to try and yam on this dude.
I know Marcus Smart is, like, the resident cult hero right now. Mm-hmm. And I'll never understand it. But I don't see how that's not Avery Bradley. That dude's amazing. Like, look at the game Kyrie had. Like, Kyrie was just like, and I think part of it was due to necessity. Or not necessity, I guess. Yeah. Like, they didn't need him.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other matchups were so tasty across the board. But Kyrie went 4 of 11, 11 points. Avery Bradley puts up 21 points on 16 shots. And, like, is just so good defensively.
Yeah, and and like we said, he improved so much as a three-point shooter that at least he's hitting almost 40%. He's just so boring.
I don't think he's boring. I think he's amazing.
As a basketball player, love him.
Like, I guess Marcus Smart flopping around the court. Yeah. I swear, when he had his little instigation thing with Tom, with Tristan, and it was great because I watched him set the whole thing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, he literally, he was boxing him out, and then as Thompson was trying to just get up the floor, he was, like, hooking him around, like, oh, yeah, no, we're making. And I could tell there's, like, a direct response, like, I'm tired of your bullshit, Tristan. Because, like, I mean, like, nobody gets away with more contact going for offensive boards than Tristan Thompson. I mean, he's straight up swim moves, dudes.
It's just one of my favorite moves, too, so I understand it.
I've gotten a few sharp elbows.
But it's, you know, it is about, like, it's straight up, like, if Avery Bradley had a facial expression, I'd be like, he could take that. But literally,
yeah, it's
like Marcus Smart.
That's a big part of it, because he's just stone-faced.
Yeah, whole time.
Whereas Marcus Smart is, like, stank face.
Oh,
like,
yeah, giving people looks. And Marcus Smart causes embarrassment. You know what I mean? Like, Marcus Smart's, like, equally, like, yeah, like, get him, like, fire, like, that's what you want, like, that sort of passion. And then at the same time, when he flops and does stuff that it's like, well, shit, man, like, I can't really go to people and be like, no, like, he plays the right way when, like, you are, like, and that was when he flopped against Kevin Love. I shouted at the screen, like, that's what happens when you do it all season. Like, you might have gotten that call if you saved the flop for that moment, but literally someone could go through your chest, and because it
happened
all year.
Well, I think it was it was the left play.
They didn't call anything.
Because, I mean, a guard gets that charge call 9 out of 10 times.
But because it's Marcus Smart, it's like all season, you can YouTube Marcus Smart flops and see, like, a 10-minute reel of his whole season.
It's such an interesting dynamic for, like, someone who is, like, I feel like most floppers are not also bulldogs.
Yeah. No, it's true. Because there's a certain, like, self-respect that,
you're like, oh, yeah. Like, Pat Bev is not flopping around. Like, he might, like, take some hits and, like, sell them, but, like, he's not making up contact.
Well, that's back, I think, why people love Marcus Smart, because he's a showman.
No matter what, like, in a 20-point blowout, he made the game interesting. Yeah. Like, in good and bad ways for, like, 2 minutes.
My favorite sort of, like, montage, when they melted down the instigation stuff, where when Marcus stepped up on Tristan, and it's optically, what Tristan was actually doing is like, look, man, like, you're trying to do something and I'm not going to go for it.
Yeah, he gave him a little pat on the back.
But optically, it looked like Tristan was like, all right, man, cool, cool. Like, we're cool. And then when Isaiah stepped to Thompson, like, Thompson steps right up on him. So it's like, oh, you want to mess with Isaiah, but not Marcus.
And then Kyrie just walks up with a scoreboard. Which, if you got Kyrie talking shit, like, Kyrie is, like, the most chill dude in the world. Like,
yeah.
So clearly they were annoying them at that point.
I mean, I think your response to Kyrie has to be like, the world is round.
Yeah. You idiot.
But no, I don't sound like a very disappointed Celtics fan in this podcast, because it's kind of like, we weren't coming into this series thinking, like, it's like, okay, let's hope we have a shot. And every game that you lose like that, it's kind of like, okay, that's always going to be something that was on the table. So let's go back and hopefully hit 50% of our threes in game two. And, like, that's kind of what it has to be game to game. And that's one, I kind of brought it up a little bit before, but in the...
It doesn't, so you're saying the margin doesn't actually matter, because it could happen anyway.
Yeah, it's not like you came in thinking, like, all right, we're gonna play them tough and like, you know, it's gonna go down to, like, a razor's edge. Like you said, things have to go right.
If it had been a super close game, just because the Celtics hit three more shots, it doesn't change your...
No, if anything, that would be worse, because it's like, okay, we were that much closer to...
To having the variance tip our way.
Exactly. That, like, if one more of those shots went in, now suddenly, like, that's, like, I'd rather, like, if you...
I was thinking about that with, in going back to game one of Spurs-Warriors, mm-hmm. because obviously I think the Warriors won by three.
Yeah.
And I just thought about that inbound where David Lee just threw it straight to Steph Curry wide open three.
Yeah,
you can point to. And I was like,
Not that it's actually statistically different, but you can still point
to. You can feel. It's a feel thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we kind of start spinning things forward, we have to talk about Al Horford.
Yeah.
And how horrible he has looked against the Cleveland Cavaliers and specifically Tristan Thompson for the last three seasons.
I mean, I just don't know. He's not built, and Tristan is a good at being an athletic four. But then even, like, I just think a LeBron-led team with athletes, which you guys do have at some positions. I mean, not every player is a superior. But even, like, the fact that the two options are, like, Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson, like, that's not good for Horford. Like, that, I don't know how where he lands in affecting the game. Because if you're giving up threes to – if you're giving up threes to Love, Horford's, while he can shoot, he's a more effective mid-post player. So that math is wrong. And then on the other end, if it's Tristan, maybe it's 2 for 2, but Tristan's creating more offensive opportunities by beating him on the offensive glass. So it's like we're paying this guy $27 million, $28 million, $30 million for the next three seasons until he's 32 years old. And it's like, how does he help?
And it doesn't matter how good he is against everyone else, which sucks.
It doesn't.
Like, the only one it matters against is the Cavs. Like, they could be here. They could be here without Horford.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a huge leap say that they could have gotten here without Horford. But
percent of what Al Horford gave you are you getting from the other players that are already on the roster? Like 75%.
Yeah.
I mean, and that money channeled towards, more size on the wing or a better athlete or something like that would provide more to this team.
It's funny that functionally this is actually a worse matchup for Horford than it was in Atlanta. Because at least in Atlanta, they had to throw Tristan on Millsap. And he couldn't take advantage of Love in those series.
Oh, I do think Horford is there's definitely decline in his game. Like, he's a smart player and, he has a high basketball IQ, which ages really well, but he's also not the same. He was more of a force. He looks small. Like, he doesn't look imposing. And I think when you go back to those...
He looks crafty. Teams,
right? Yeah, like the YMCA guy that knows more than you. But I don't see, what he ended up doing last night specifically. 4 for 11, 1 for 3 from deep, played 37 minutes. 4 offensive rebounds, great. Like, that's good. Like, 6 assists. Again, he can pass well and he can do some good things. But defensively, I think, like, right here looking at Basketball Reference box score, his defensive rating was 128 when he's on the court. And it's like, the whole game it was 127, but he's supposed to be a defender. Along with that offensive initiation, and I don't see how he defends anyone.
Yeah, it goes back to the reality that, like, and this is why Kevin Love's metrics will always be better than people think they would be or should be. Because, like, a huge part of possessions are ending them.
Yeah.
He had 4 defensive rebounds.
Yeah.
Playing as the only big for much of the time.
Yeah, I mean, Jaylen Brown led the team with 5 defensive boards. I mean, you look at looking at offensive rating, Tristan Thompson's was 172.
Offensive
rebounding percentage was 21.7.
Actually, via NBA.com, it was 26.1. It might even be higher.
Yeah.
Like, BB Ref and NBA.com have different formulas for some of this stuff, but
still, it's
ridiculous.
I don't see how, and he's not going to force fouls against Tristan. I don't think, like, they're going to defend him pretty
Tristan
well.
Tristan doesn't foul.
So it's just not, 2 free throws. I mean, the whole game, their free throw percentage was free throws per, compared to field goal attempts is 11%. Like, it's not, he's not going to help in the ways you need him to help. And he's going to take up close to 30%, 20,
3% of the cap with it not rising in a significant way. Like, obviously, they still have cap room. They still have opportunity. The assets that they have, it's not that something can't happen. I just think this particular swing is a miss.
It's problematic that he is eating up this much space
that
could otherwise be going towards max players. And I think we should spin this forward. Well, first off, how many games do you think the Celtics end up winning in this series?
It's hard to say. It goes more than five. Like, you know, and this game two is super important. Like, that's, I think it's not as if they couldn't hit a lot of threes in any one of the next three games.
Yeah, but it's like, if you hypothetically bet on a Cavs sweep,
yeah,
game two would be the best hedge game, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I would
hypothetically.
Hypothetically, if we're speaking in a world where that had happened,
where some degenerate
would
have parlayed a Warriors and Cavs sweep.
Yeah, wow, that person has got to be feeling pretty decent.
He hypothetically does.
But I think, yeah, game two would be, it's at home. You know, you got to think there's a certain like zigzag potential there where the Cavs are feeling great and the Warriors are the Warriors. The Celtics are you know, particularly focused, and the stats just kind of, the ball bounces their way a little bit more than it did the previous game. But, it's got to be offensively. Like, they've got to score.
It's shootouts. I agree. I don't think they win any beat down.
No.
Slugfest.
Because if you slow it down, like, if you're slowing it down in terms of, like, a half court where each possession matters, the Cavs are going to be more efficient. Because you're going to have awesome layups. Like, what LeBron was doing, those shots weren't super easy.
That reverse layup he made in the first quarter.
Yeah.
Where he was, like, swooping in from right to left and then, like, does, like, a cradle rock and then, like, put some English on it on the reverse was ridiculous.
The spins that he was putting, I mean, overall, like, he just would leap and then he's in air. He's in air space all on his own. Like, there's no one around him, so he can just sort of, like, you know,
whatever angle he wants to spin the ball,
he can do put that up. Mental physics. He's got a moment to look at it and, like, you know, let his subconscious make those calculations and then spin it off the glass.
We feel like we're pitching a LeBron ad right now. like LeBron jumps, freeze frame, inner monologue.
Yeah. Record scratch.
So you're probably wondering how I got up here.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'm going to do next. But it's true. I mean, I'm sure you could just put together a highlight compilation of him in the air. You know, he leaps from just outside the circle and there's no hands there. And obviously, again, the most famous being Isaiah's face right in his crotch. But, like, and he did miss that layup, by the way. That one
on a foul. Out. Got fouled.
But, yeah, come on. It was the same shot, effectively, as the ones that he hit earlier.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think that's a really interesting point. Is, like, I remember I was listening to a podcast once, and they were talking about how we're really interested in, like, shooting gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were talking about DeAndre Jordan and how he has vertical gravity.
Yeah.
Like, he pulls people in to try to avoid him getting up in that space right above the rim. And, like, LeBron had vertical gravity. I'm like no one could even get into his
atmosphere. I don't know if there's an adjustment. Like, who is it that's coming across that's coming over early to prevent that jump? Like, I guess you have to get bodies in front of him around the free throw line so he's not getting into the lane where he can just elevate.
Jay Crowder looks like a better perimeter defender than he is. I feel like he's almost better against in that small ball role defensively, like kind of that Draymond help defense, you know. Big guys think they can post up on him well. But, like, LeBron, like, I think if you're the Celtics...
You're talking about LeBron, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's like... He's...
But I'm just saying, like, the Celtics, I think, should be concerned that LeBron didn't even really need a pick to get past them.
No, that he...
Like, LeBron...
Any matchup, they could pretty much clear out. And if anything, they would screen just because it's that much easier if it's Horford or Linick. But other than that, it's like, you can just size up.
He looked fast in that game. Like... I remember, I think it was Nate Duncan who famously raised the ire of Cavs Twitter by saying LeBron doesn't blow by people anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, he's, like, relatively easy. Like, even if they were kind of in front of him, they would do that thing where they give him enough of a runway for him to bump them on the way to the rim, and they just go flying. And he did that to Olynyk on the play where he was clowning him. He just kind of give him a little bump on the way and then just bloop.
Well, it's kind of funny because it's like, okay, he's not the same. He's not the same shooter as other players might be, so you give him space because it's like, okay, he's so athletic. I want to give him room so I can react. But it's like with him, once he gets a little bit of momentum, it's like he can blow by you if you're too upright. But also, if he gets into your body, you're going to bounce off him and he's going to have space. Whether you're, you know, 6'10 Kelly Olynyk or you're Jay Crowder. So it's almost like a weird thing that, like, I wonder if it's not get up in him a little bit more. And with a quick player like, you know, Jaylen Brown or something like that, and like try and stay with him.
Yeah. And I feel like Brown is probably the best. They should never, ever try Marcus Smart on him again. Like, Brown might not be a quote unquote LeBron stopper, but no. Do not try Marcus Smart anymore. He fouled out in 21 minutes or something like that. I'll double check.
Yeah, it's 21 minutes.
Yeah. Like, it's not fair. He's 6'3". Like, you can't guard him with a point guard. You can't guard Kevin Love with a point guard. It doesn't work. And, like, I don't know. It's been really interesting. Something Justin and I were talking about in the last pod is that this is been the trend all year where teams are saying, well, we see what happens when you play Atlanta Hawks style defense and you help and you recover is they just shred you. So we have to choose to let LeBron beat us.
Yeah.
And that's what the Celtics did. Like, they didn't, like, throw a ton of help at him.
No. I mean, once he got in the lane, there was some of that rotation. But this is said you have to. So you can't give up.
Just wide open dunks.
Yeah, and, you know, 100%. You know, at least drop it down to 70%.
Yeah, they don't have, like, the personnel to even just let LeBron beat them. Like, I don't know. I just think they're screwed. Like, I don't think they have the bodies. I don't think they have the roster construction.
That's why it is straight up like, okay, can you make 50% of your threes?
Yeah. It's such a, like, not sexy way to analyze, but that doesn't make it any less true.
Well, what's the, like you're saying, like, just bodies in terms of personnel. And the hard part is, I mean, when we talked, you kind of mentioned this before we got on, but it's like, the answer is just you have to go get a Paul George, right? Like, I mean, it's like who out there are you adding? Let's say you had the number one pick, Markel Fultz. Like, well, that doesn't.
Well, now we're playing 4 point guards 25 yeah. minutes a game.
Yeah, exactly.
Like right now they're playing 3 6'2" or shorter guys.
Yeah.
30 minutes a game, and like so they get Markel Fultz. That doesn't really. I don't think it moves the needle, even if he's really good.
No.
Just because of the way minutes allotments work.
Like, what's your hope that you're that much better offensively? Like, he's not going to help you defensively. There's no way a rookie is coming in and improving your offense in a dramatic sense.
Especially, like, it's not like, because, like, you know, like, you want to, like, I'll joke about Marcus Smart. He does well in the metrics and the lineup data, right? Like, he is a good player for them. Bradley's become a really important player for them. And obviously, Isaiah is super important for them. So, I don't know where that comes. But I guess to me, obviously, they're going to chase Gordon Hayward because that's the one that they can pick up without losing anything back.
Yeah, losing assets.
Is there a price, once that happens, that you wouldn't pay for Paul George or Jimmy Butler?
I mean,
In terms of draft compensation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difficulty with Paul George is the lack of guarantee that you're having him for more than a year.
I will die on this hill. There's no way he walks. There's no way. No one has ever would leave a team as talented as that, assuming Gordon Hayward also signs there. No one has ever left a team with that much talent unless they were going to join the Golden State Warriors last summer.
Or the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, I guess so. But that was loaded. That's like, you know what I mean. Like, way more loaded than Paul
He's
George.
He's going home. He's going home to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Then Paul George
and
is
you
like,
should understand that, wearing your home shirt right now.
Oh, wow.
Home is where the heart is.
You can buy that at fearthesword.com. I don't know. Like, it just feels like this thing where, like, sure, like, of course his agent's going to push him to L.A. Because, of course, he wants to go to L.A. But, like, especially, like, with 1 year, that's a thing that I kind of get a kick out of. Sometimes I'll talk to some Cavs fans, like, you know, like, Durant's a free agent. Like, if they lose, he might walk. But, like, if you lose when you're on a team that good in your first year, your reaction is not to walk. It's,
let's re-up and let's go get
it. Dude, I can't believe we blew that. Let's go. Let's go back. So I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, like, Kevin Love would be kind of the example of that kind of trade, right? Like, the amount of capital that you set.
Yeah, and by the way, did not have fun his first year.
yeah.
And still, like, the pressure is so strong when you're on a good team. For you to leave to go to a crappy one?
Well, what's your selling point? Like, what's your public announcement that you're doing it? Like,
I'm coming home.
Yeah.
I'm coming. Yeah. Oh, wait, they already burned that.
But I mean, like, for like Kevin Love, like, what would be your rationale that you could sit up there in a press conference, like, I'm excited to win. I'm like, okay, well, you just left a team that went to the finals. Like, what are you know, same thing with Paul George, right? Like,
if hypothetically he were
to go to the Celtics, like, could you go up there? Could you sit there on the dais in Los Angeles and be like, I mean, I guess it's like, I want to build something. I didn't want to be a mercenary, but like, you know,
But you got traded, so you're not a mercenary.
The point would be that it's a chance. Like, not even that, like, okay, and you can't, you know, the only way you do it is if you have that, like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, hey, you're coming to the best possible situation, like, come here and re-up. And then you wait until you reach that free agency to actually re-up, so it doesn't look like you had the deal in place when you made the trade.
I think all Danny Ainge needs to do is say, you have a chance to be the third most beloved Celtic on the team.
Yeah, right. You have a chance.
Because Gordon Hayward's going to move right up to number one. Because reasons.
Yeah.
That have nothing to do with racial issues in Boston.
Being not a Boston native, I'm really not the person to talk about that at all.
But we can make fun of him. Yeah. And so Gordon, but I don't know, man. I just think that that's like something. You get your wink-wink deal, and push comes to shove. This is what you get to this point for.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other
would you give up both? Like, if you had a wink-wink deal with Jordan, do you give up Fultz and next year's Brooklyn pick if you can maintain your core pieces of your roster, a.k.a. don't have to give up Bradley?
Yeah, I mean, it's if you're just giving up straight draft assets to bring in.
You have to match salary, but it's not – Jordan's only making, like, $18 million this year. So it's not actually that hard. I pulled up. I think it's like Tyler Zeller. You have to give up Jalen, but like I don't think you really need him at that point.
Yeah, that's fine.
You'd have to give up Jalen, and you would have to give up Marcus Smart.
Basically giving up like the number three pick, the number one, the potential for a top three next year.
Yeah, and Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's the reason you drafted 400 point guards. Because you still have Terry Rozier, who's looked competent back there.
Yeah, what percentage are you getting?
You can steal Avery Bradley minutes at the one, especially if you're going to have that many wings. Because, like, you go from having, like, no really useful wings that you can count on outside of Jay Crowder to Hayward, George, and Crowder.
The hard part, honestly, and it's so hard to tell. You know, I think internally they probably value Jalen Brown more than we do because they see him and they see his development and see what he's done. And we look at a guy that you know, is playing a relatively limited number of minutes for the number three pick and contributing at a relatively small amount. But I think, like, you know, I've seen a lot of people on the flip side talk about how much he's done in that time. And if he was on a different team, like, he would be a Rookie of the Year candidate. And so I think it's, you know,
a Rookie of the Year candidate in one of the worst rookie classes ever.
Of all time. But it's at the same time, it's do you say Jalen Brown, the number one pick, a.k.a. Markelle Fultz, and, you know, all the draft cachet next year, is that really the core for the post-LeBron era? Or if you bring in Paul George now, can you get over that hump? And, like, you know, on one hand, like, I'm all for trying to take advantage of a chance that you're maybe 75% of the way there to right now. Plus, you know, you're opening up to variants. Like, let's say Kyrie gets hurt or Kevin Love gets hurt. You know, those things have happened before in the past. Like, that's, I definitely can see why you would want to take advantage of you're so much closer now.
I don't think you have to wait out the LeBron era anymore if you have Paul George, Gordon Hayward, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Al Horford, Avery Bradley.
Yeah.
I think that team is good enough to make the Cavs. I mean, I remember David Griffin said something and like after the trade deadline, he was doing a podcast and he said something on the lines of like, we were only really getting nervous once we thought that they were going to get George and Butler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that team is now ready. That team has top-end talent and they're way deeper than you.
No, it's true. I mean, you're adding two All-NBA players.
And also worth noting, I remember when they traded, when LeBron came back and then there was the consternation of how much they should give up for Love. And it was like, well, like, part of the deal is to go get Love, right? Like,
yeah.
If Gordon Hayward's coming, if you are going to sign Gordon Hayward, who is 27, so entering his basketball prime, if you tell him, come sign with us, we're going to be great, we won 50 games last year, and then say, but we are going to leave our options open to kind of just reset. like that doesn't, that's not a great pitch.
No, no.
Like, hey, we might let the player you're probably coming here to play with, Isaiah Thomas, walk so he can play Markelle Fultz, who you probably watched play twice.
Well, I think that's fair, and it's like you're looking like, by trying to straddle both things, you're going to be none of them, right?
Yeah.
Like you know, are you really maintaining future flexibility? I mean, are developing these draft assets, you know, these players that you draft into, the kind of players they can be, and I don't know the answer. I mean, it's...
And part of it is, like, they do have this insane cache of young players that don't play or are overseas. Yeah. Like, you know, sure, you might lose Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart, but you're going to bring in, you know, Demetrius Jackson, Terry Rozier into the rotation, and Garshan Yabusele, who is, like, this, you know, nice draft stash prospect over in Europe right now. It's like, you have all the pieces to do this, and, like, what is the point if you don't do it now?
Yeah, no, cash in. I mean, you got to, at some point, you have to, it's what you weigh, right? Like, okay, do we jump off, do we commit to one way or another, and what's the optimal time to do that? When is the marketplace? And that's one thing you can say for Danny Ainge is that, like, over time, he's shown that he's really, really freaking good at judging when that time period is. Like, you know, whether it's going all in for the guys in 08 or... you know, even this cash of or jumping off the train when, and, you know, whatever. Like, that's a once-in-a-lifetime trade that they did with Brooklyn. Like, that's not replicable. Like, someone has to be so dumb to be willing to do that. You know, maybe we trade Al Horford for some, you know, for some first-round picks, right? Like,
yeah.
For some stupid GM out there. You know, what's Vlade Divac doing? But, you know, it's, you gotta pick. You gotta commit one way or another. And if it's cashing all that in for Paul George, like, if you're bringing Gordon, I mean, this is kind of an absurd conversation too, right? Because it's like, okay, if you can add two all NBA players, are you now better than the team you're chasing? And I still don't know if that answer is completely yes.
Yeah, but you're now in the, I mean, it would be like the Cavs turning down adding the payroll to add Kyle Korver to, like, not chase the Warriors. Like, you're there.
Yeah.
At that point. And, like, sure, you might be, it might be a 60-40 series or even 65-35, but, like, dude, come on.
It's better than now.
Come on. Like, this is
9-10.
This is, if you're going to go like this, you might as well just let Isaiah walk and start over.
No, that's true. And that's
a way. You wasted it. Yeah. You wasted the capital you have. I guess, I mean, like, not to be like, you know, I hate being, like, super rings culture-y here, but, like, same time, like, it is the point. Like, that's the goal.
Trying to chase. And you're here, so, like, what do you want to win? Do you want to win 50 games for three seasons and then have sort of a reset, or, like, try and go all in and get to that promised land? And I think you gotta do it. And then in 10 years, you know, we might look back and be like, that was a terrible decision, but at the time, like, the chances were there. The odds were
but
there.
Like, to be clear, because sometimes when people talk about this, it's like they talk about it like they're gonna do what Brooklyn did. Like, no, they're trying to pick up two all NBA players in their prime.
Yeah.
And they're not even using their own picks.
Yeah. Or, like, mortgaging their they're literally it's a surplus of assets that the timelines don't match up. Like, the window for Fultz and whoever they get next year, and even Jaylen Brown is 4 years from now.
And Al Horford is Isaiah's is ticking. Like, it's just all, so I don't know. It just, this is almost, if you give up way too much for Paul George, you're still doing better than you were before you gave up too much for Paul George.
And
that's my
assets,
point.
And those assets look so good right now. Like, what happens when Fultz hits the floor? And
think about how much less valuable Jaylen Brown is than a third overall pick.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the thing, is that, like, there's something so tantalizing about the possibility of what they have, but the reality of what those
the second
are.
They're like cars. The second the second you drive off the lot with them, they devalue. So, yeah, we can go ahead and wrap it up from here. Danny Ainge is an idiot if he doesn't move forward, is what you're saying.
Clearly.
And so let's...
And we're already talking about next year, so clearly there's not much more to talk about in terms of series we didn't really go through.
Let's close things out. What's your prediction for game two?
I think it's one of two ways. I think, you know, probably an 18-point loss. Like, realistically, like, you know, are they going to be more rested and, you know, bounce back in a way that they're hitting their shots and that variance factor goes in their favor? Like, that's really hard to say that there's any reason that would be the case. So, realistically, they lose by 15 points.
Well, hashtag Brad Stevens the God. You might have something to say about that. People's favorite coach in NBA history. But I tend to agree with you. I think this is going to be another loss. I think it is looking like a potential Cavs sweep here. But that's about all the time we have. Thanks for listening to the Chase Down. Thank you so much to Michael Kruiser for coming on. He's a solid producer over at 120 Sports, a senior producer. He's hot shit or something. So, please subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, however you listen to your podcasts. Leave us a review. That's the best way to help us kind of get our reach out there. Thanks for listening, and go Caps.
Go South.
Oh!